Staff for not paying attention to the clock as well, but we're going to go slow and try and accommodate any people that come for the open public comment segment here on the Gray's Harbor Management Policy Briefing and Public Comment. Mike? Oh, one other thing, the director, the director and Barbara are not here for a while, so Mike, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thank you for letting me come here to talk to you. Chair Carpenter, Vice Chair Baker is not here. Director's not here, so Assistant Director Windrup, thank you for giving me the opportunity to present the review of the Gray's Harbor Salmon Management Policy for 2019. I am Mike Scharf. I am the District Fisheries Biologist. Chad was supposed to be here, but we're giving him good recovery thoughts so that he can be here for some of the later talks. This is, I think, our fifth year of review of this policy, so some of you have heard this before. New for some of the other people here. This talk is going to look at a couple of the key elements of the policy that dictate or direct us on annual salmon development. It's going to review some of the things that we worked with in 2019 and an overview of some of the results, particularly stock by stock. Then just a real quick look at 2020 and what we got to look forward to. And then a quick report on the Wainucci mitigation. Trying to go slow, but I like to get through these quick. So there's a bunch of elements in this policy that are designed to provide some consistency and predictability in our annual salmon development process. Three of them that are kind of paramount in what we do each year and how the policy guides us to develop our fisheries. Enhancement of conservation focus, gear conflict, and sharing principles are the three that really kind of drive what we're doing each year. So I'll cover those real quick. Although conservation is paramount, the policy provides some consistency and predictability in achieving that goal. There are a couple of things that the policy guides us to do in situations where we have forecasts that are not above 10% above the goal. It's designed to provide a little buffer. So when we have our forecasts that are not above 10% above goal, we have a 5% impact limitation. So when we're developing our fisheries, we make sure that that particular stock, all the impacts that are associated with the fisheries, will not exceed 5%. We also have that same 5% restriction on those stocks that aren't routinely achieving our escapement goals. So if we have a stock, say, Gray's Chehalis Natural Origin Chinook that hasn't achieved their escapement goal 3 out of 5 years, we'll develop our fisheries for this particular year to not exceed that 5%. One of the major issues that we heard during the development of this policy in 2014 was the lack of passage opportunity for fish through the harbor due to commercial nets. There was concern that there were too many days in a row with nets in the river. So the policy was designed to address that situation. It guides us to provide at least 3 days in any calendar week with not more than 4 days, well, 3 days without nets in the river. Which is sometimes very challenging in that this policy does not govern our treaty fisheries. So if they decide to go ahead and have a 5-day-a-week fishery, that's their prerogative. So if they're planning 4 days or more in any given week, we will not put together a fishing package that includes one day of non-treaty commercial fishery for that particular week. And the third key element that kind of directs us each year is sharing policy principles. There are several of them there. One of them is to emphasize the Chinook impacts for recreational fisheries while limiting the commercial impacts to Chinook to incidental while targeting other stocks, hatchery fish and abundant other stocks. And there are also guidelines in the policy that help us to allocate, for lack of better words, impacts to the sport fishery. We have two that occur. One's in the marine water, one's in freshwater. So this is designed to make sure that all sectors have an opportunity for some of those impacts. So those are the three main elements to this policy that kind of help us through each year. And so now I'm going to kind of transition into a review of 19 and just hit a quick points here. Then I will go into kind of the stock specific review and how they did for this year. Sure.
Are the hatchery fish in the fishery marked?
Yes.
They are. And the second question is, there isn't a dip in fishery as much as Willapa, I would guess.
No, there really isn't.
In estuary.
Yeah, the fisheries are a little bit later than what we see in Willapa Bay, so there's less likely, and not to say that there will be different fish in there, but they're later and some of them are further into the bay, particularly 2A and 2D. If I can go back to the quick, let's see, which way did we go? The map up here, we have not opened a fishery in 2B in a number of years to address our shortfall in our hump tulips coho population. That's probably where you're going to see more of those dip-in fish milling. So we've kind of limited it to the 2C, 2D, and 2A areas.
Thank you.
Excuse my ignorance. Can you
That's
explain
okay.
Dip-in?
So a dip-in would be a fish that is that will go into, like, Grays Harbor that originates from the Columbia River or some other areas that are not local to Grays Harbor itself. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, they kind of swim around and then leave. So in Grays Harbor, it really hasn't been a major concern because our fisheries are structured so that we don't encounter a lot of them. Okay, going into 2019, we knew we had two constraining stocks. Hump tulips, natural origin coho have not achieved its escapement goal in 3 out of 5 years, as well as the natural origin Chinook in the Chehalis River. So going into the season, we knew that we had to craft our fisheries to minimize our impacts on those two stocks to 5% or less, kind of our drivers in 2019 season. So we had to develop, along with the other policy elements of the policy, those were kind of our guiding issues. So now I'm going to hit each kind of individual stock real quick. Going into this season, our spring Chinook forecast was 581, so it was well below the escapement goal of 1,400. With that information, we did not put together a fishery package that included a directed fishery on our spring Chinook. I will mention that we did do an in-season adjustment to our fishing schedule in concert with our co-managers and closed all fisheries in areas where spring Chinook can be encountered, Newaukum River, Upper Chehalis Basin, Skookum Chuck, and Main Stem Chehalis. We did that for all fisheries in conjunction with tribes closing down all of their net fisheries. Our Chehalis Fall Natural Origin Chinook, we knew going into the season we're going to have a 5% maximum impact even though we had a forecast that was well above the escapement goal, one of our guiding principles. So we crafted, we developed a fishery in conjunction with our co-managers. The model produced an output that showed that we would expect 9,924 fish to escape the fisheries and to spawn wild naturally. And our model produced, it predicted that all our fishery impacts from WDFW would have 4.5% impact on that this particular stock. So that achieved our goal of keeping our impacts under 5%. And in the gear conflict impact distribution, there is a guidance that we keep our commercial impacts to 0.8% or less if we have a 5% cap. And our modeled prediction was 0.65. So in our planning, we were below and achieved all of the goals within the policy. We have preliminary escapement numbers for some of our stocks, and I wish I could call them final, but we are still doing a lot of QA, QC on our data collected, and so we don't have final agreements. But it looks like our escapement for Chehalis Natural Chinook is going to achieve that escapement goal of 9,753. This will be the first time since the policy has been implemented that we will achieve that goal three out of the past 5 years. So this is kind of exciting for us. I do have preliminary numbers for the impact rates. I'll have to say that we don't know what our recreational impacts are at this time. We had to make a prediction for those running our planning model with current catch data and escapement data, and running iterations a couple of times to get all the numbers to match. So that part of the run reconstruction is a prediction, but it looks like when we calculate everything up, we're going to achieve all the goals that were set forth in the policy. Oops. Hump Tulips Natural Origin Chinook. The forecast was above the threshold of 10% above goal, and we have achieved escapement three out of 5 years, so we did not have any maximum impacts for this particular stock. The goal was to achieve the conservation objective. We crafted a fisheries in understanding that we had other stocks with limitations, and the model predicted that 4,200 fish would escape, which is above the goal. And also, we have another limitation on our commercial fisheries because we are emphasizing those impacts for recreational, and our Chinook impacts in the commercial fishery are targeting incidental for targeting other stocks. And in our planning model, it shows that we would have achieved that 5.4% max. And I need to explain some of the numbers here because you will see that the natural spawning number is larger than the natural origin run size. All of our goals that are established within the Grace Harbor are for natural spawning fish putting eggs in the gravel. But in our planning, we try to achieve those goals with natural origin fish that were born out of the gravel. So you'll see a little discrepancy here in that we had a few more hatchery fish spawning than we, I can't say account for, but that we expected. And that the predicted return was the actual return is a lot less than what we predicted. And I still caution you here that there's still a lot of data that we haven't been able to look at. And there were some flow conditions this year, low flows in the fall, that may have redistributed some of our spawning populations, and some of those data sets aren't available to us yet, but we're still working on that. So that number, in my opinion, could go up, but I still feel that for some reason we had an escapement on the Chehalis side, but we're not. Doesn't look like we'll achieve that natural origin escapement goal on the Hump Tulip side. don't know why the fish didn't come back as, in the numbers that we expected. Moving to coho, on the Chehalis side, that stock has been achieving its goal 3 out of 5 years. Its forecast was above that 10% threshold, so we didn't have any constraints on harvest rates. Our guidance was to achieve the conservation objective of 28,506. We had a fairly strong forecast, and after the planning model was put together and fishing packages were developed, it predicted that 38,000 would escape to the spawning grounds. I don't have any preliminary numbers for coho at this time. Their spawning time curve is much larger than Chinook, and we're still counting reds. I do have a couple of tools that I use to look at how the run's doing. We got some trap information that tracks pretty well with the end of the season escapement. And that number indicates that we're probably looking at an escapement of over 30,000. So it does appear that this stock is going to achieve its escapement goal again this year. However, for a hump tulips coho, that's not quite the same story. This stock hasn't achieved its escapement goal 3 out of 5 years. The forecast was well below the escapement goal. Going into the season, we have 5% maximum impact. Again, after fisheries were developed, it predicted that just over around 3,600 fish would escape. It also predicted that our impacts while targeting Chinook, hatchery, coho, and chum would be 4.4%. So in the planning process, we achieved the goals that were in the policy. Going the wrong way. And the last one is a Grays Harbor chum. We had a fairly robust forecast. We've achieved the escapement goal 3 out of 5 years. No restrictions on the harvest rates. We designed what we thought was a pretty robust fishery after this stock. The commercial catch was predicted to be around 13,000. And after all fisheries were developed and the model was run, it predicted that 33,000 chum would escape. So we're achieving the goal of the, or the guidelines of the policy. This chum have a much smaller spawn window than coho and Chinook, so we have a fairly finalized number of 27,900 fish that escaped this year, so we've achieved the goal for our chum population. But you'll notice that the postseason numbers are quite a bit lower than the forecast. It's shown in both commercial catch of treaty and non-treaty numbers. So those fish didn't return in the numbers that were forecasted to return, but we still achieved the escapement goal, so that's a good thing. So now I'm going to jump into just some a couple quick tables showing the commercial, non-treaty commercial fishery. On the left is what the model predicted the catch would be in that non-treaty fishery. I want to point out that the natural origin or NOR number is a little bit mixture of non-harvest mortality along with some directed harvest. In Area 2C, we allow natural origin Chinook to be harvested. So that number shows that there is some harvest, but a lot of it is non-harvest mortality. And on the right, the actual numbers, and these come from Fish Ticket Database, our port sampling, and we do onboard monitoring. There was 20 natural origin Chinook that were harvested in Catch Area 2C. So the rest of that 117 is non-harvest mortality during the non-directed fisheries in 2A, 2D. And the key here is to note that all harvest numbers were quite a bit lower than what we predicted. There are a couple of speculations here. One is the number of fish returning were much lower than the forecast. And also we had some environmental conditions in the fall with low flows that may have influenced the run timing of some of these fish, and our fishery windows are pretty small. So if we don't catch those run timing windows, that could affect our catch. And I also wanted to kind of just point out that in the development of the policy, there was kind of a goal of 78,000 X vessel value, and that in the predicted column, it shows that sometimes it's tough to even achieve that in our preseason planning with a lot of the restrictions that are out there, run sizes coming in smaller than anticipated. And to actually achieve those predictions is even more difficult. And there's a lot of different reasons why those happen: run timing, cost of fish, number of fish coming back. So this is just a representation of what has that X vessel value been in the commercial fishery in the last few years. Now, I'm just going to kind of hit some of the high notes from 2019. I want to reiterate again that the escapement of Chehalis natural origin Chinook, it appears to have exceeded the goal three out of the past 5 years. Excuse me. And first time since policy was developed that this has occurred. So I think that's something that needs to be pointed out. I didn't hit on it earlier, but we have done some in-season adjustments to our salmon fisheries this year. We did one for spring Chinook. We also adjusted the bag limit for salmon in Grays Harbor, along with it was a coast-wide adjustment for basically to address what looked to be a shortfall of coho returning up and down the coast. So in November, we reduced the bag limit in our freshwater fisheries from one adult or two adults down to one. And also kind of want to point out that the commercial fishery that we scheduled this last year was two weeks in a row where we had four 12-hour days, and we haven't been able to do that in a number of years. And I just thought that I should point that out, that part, we were able to get a few more days in for the non-treaty commercial fishery. And now just quickly, what do I think what we will have to deal with in 2020? Some of the ocean indicators are not very promising for our coho forecasts. And I think that is going to be one of our biggest influences of what we do for our 2020 seasons. Also, again, we have our humped tulips natural origin coho. Didn't make a goal this year, so we're going to have a 5% impact on that stock. Other than that one, though, we don't have any 5% limits on any of our other stocks going into the 2020 season, which is nice. It's the first time, I think, since I've been doing this that we've only had one stock with limitations. So I think I'm going to give a quick update on the Wainuchi mitigation. Talks continued with the Quinault tribe, and a plan has been developed. That plan was presented to the public in a meeting on September 24th, and that plan provides for 100,000 unmarked coho to be released into the Wainuchi River to address reduction in natural production, 400,000 clipped coho to be released from the Bingham Creek hatchery to address loss of fishing opportunity, and an additional 65,000 clipped late winter steelhead to be released into the Wainuchi River. We will be happy to provide a more in-depth briefing at a later date. And that's all I have. Hopefully I expanded it long enough to cover some of the areas.
Commissioner Linville?
Can you just explain the significance of I think I understand what it is, but I just want to make sure, of the 100,000 that are unmarked versus the 400,000 that are marked. Why behind that?
I will give my two cents. Do you want to take that? Or I can do it. part of the mitigation was to address the loss of natural production. And it's felt that some of that money needs to be there to provide that. This will allow more fish to escape and to spawn naturally.
Chair Carpenter, thank you. Commissioner Linville, in addition to what Mike said, one of our thoughts was that with the difficulties we've had on the coast and the ocean fisheries for lower abundant coho populations, that there may be some increasing in those terminal areas in the river where we have marked selective fisheries. These fish would not be targeted in that, and therefore we'd have an increase that would be able to be seeded back into the river, not taken in those marked selective fisheries.
Thank you. That makes sense. Thanks.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Chairman, I wonder if you could go to your previous slide on the mitigation. And my question is this ongoing mitigation, and is it part of a mitigation agreement with the power company?
You're doing just fine.
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McIsaac, I'm doing just fine, apparently. So that's the first. But Commissioner McIsaac, thanks for the question. It is, we've had a pot of money for, gosh, I'd turn to some folks that have been here trying to help us along and push us along for the last 25, 30 years to try to get through this mitigation. We've got a pot of money that's been held in trust with Tacoma Power. And with this agreement that we've reached with the Quinault Nation, we've sent a letter to Tacoma. We've had a conversation with Tacoma. Tacoma had some difficulties with some of the parameters and how to expend some of that money that expires in 2039. And we've now revised that, have agreement with the Quinault Nation, sent that back, and we believe it'll go to FERC so that we can implement these programs.
So are you describing a situation where there was a one-time pot of money that was gaining interest and it is not an ongoing mitigation obligation annually as some sort of compensation for ongoing habitat loss?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McIsaac, correct. We have correct with the following. It's not an ongoing annual piece of money. It's been money that's been sitting in a fund that has been accruing interest. The original thought process were, I would say, twofold that we've thoroughly investigated. First was for a facility to be put on the Wainuchi River, and then second, such a facility such as an Eicher screen established to help out migration success, and we just didn't have enough money in the trust to go after federal match to complete the whole project. And some of the pots of money that we were working on back in the early 2000s have gone away just due to the structure of some of the federal programs, and we then shifted to trying to come to agreement on how to expend just the funds that we have to meet the mitigation obligations that were there from the original. The levels of production are built so that they make up for what we haven't spent the money on for the first 25 years. So we actually are raising more than the annual mitigation, so that by the time you get to the end of the use of the mitigation funds, we've raised the prescribed number of fish over the life, the 50-year life of the license, instead of just the truncated period of what we're going to spend through that those years. Sorry for being clumsy with that, but
no.
Yeah.
I guess a follow-up question is: what's your confidence level that this one-time seeding of that watershed and with hatchery fish, marked and unmarked? What do you see the future? I mean, based on ocean conditions, are we going to have to come up with some additional funding in the future to continue this program of some sort, or what's your thoughts going forward there?
The unmarked, Commissioner Carpenter, thank you. The unmarked fish that go into the Wainuchi are only scheduled to be unmarked for the first 5 years of the program. So once that occurs, so that we can see what kind of savings we may get from marked selective fisheries, we can transition to marked fish and then have additional fish for production and harvest opportunities for both treaty and non-treaty anglers and fishers. If we were to keep this the programs going, not knowing if the power companies will seek to relicense their structures, I would imagine that we'll have some opportunity to look for those funds and know that we'll have partners, co-managers that will be standing beside us, hopefully a local community members who have been with us at some degree. And when I say that, just so commissioners know, if they do testify on the Wainuchi, their frustration is warranted. We've taken a long time to get through this. It's been a pain in the neck for them. You have heard a lot of the things about us kicking the can down the road, and I can certainly empathize with their feelings and understand them clearly. So don't take light what they say.
Thank you, Ron. Anyone else? Well, thank you. That went well.
Thank you.
We're now going to move into the public comment period, and I expect the list here that I have of people have been here before. They know it's 3 minutes. So I think I'm going to call four of you up. I've got four chairs, so let's do it four at a time. Tim Hamilton. Bob Lake, Joe Durham, and Daryl Johnson.
Thank you, members of the commission. For the record, my name is Tim Hamilton. I'm president of Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy. I've raised millions of salmon in the Chehalis River. I've lived on the Chehalis River my entire life. I have caught three. When you look at this policy, understand when we developed it, went through it, it's got a 4-3 in it. In Grace Harbor, we have a significant difference in that we have a treaty tribe, the Quinaults, on the lower end. We have a tribal reservation at Oakville up at the upper end, and then we have in between. So when you put our problem was we had 4 days of nets, 7 days of nets, and you couldn't get any fish upstream. So the 4-3 worked very well, because then as the run is coming along, they could get above where the nets fish with the Quinaults and with the commercials. They could get to Montesano. They could get the stage up. So this worked very well for conservation as well as for equalizing allocation of harvest. We haven't had the difficulties down there because, to be quite honest with you, people accepted the policy. We haven't gone back and changed it. We haven't fought over it. You don't hear from us too much. That's because everybody knows what it is. Now, the other point I'd make to you is you see these figures of 5% if the run size is not there. If we don't have run size to reach escapement goal, we're going to harvest at 5%. Well, in a general sense, that's 5% for state fisheries. And if we got a 50-50 match with the Quinault, it's 10%. So you'll see that we've been successful sometimes. And the maximum harvest rate combined is 10, not 20. We have, by comparison, in the Willapa, we have failed to have escapement goal come in as a run size, and we've harvested those fish at 20%. And even at 5 and 10, the last question I left Mike with that never got answered was, when again will there be a child raised on the Chehalis Basin who could walk to the river and retain a Chinook? We can't. We're done. No child can walk through his farm and retain a Chinook. in the Chehalis Basin. Thank you.
Bob Blake.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Chairman Carpenter and Director Suzeland. My name is Bob Blake. I'm an advisor for Grays Harbor on the commercial side. The big problem we have, and you've heard the 4-3 deal, we need to fish when the fish are there. That's why you've seen the crummy numbers that you've seen on our catches. Those fish was already biased by the time we was allowed to fish. One of the things I would like to see, before this whole policy changed everything, we used to have some tremendously good fisheries in Grays Harbor and Area 2B. I know Hump Tulip's coho has been one part of the issue, but run timing, if we go by run timing in areas, we could actually have a decent fishery. We're not looking to kill off any runs by any means. That's not where we're at. But that four-day rule absolutely kills us because the tribes pick the days they're fishing. We don't get a whole lot of representation from the department trying to negotiate a season, I don't believe. I've never been brought into it. I would like to be. And I think that we are looking at some real destitute times because of that four-day on and 3 days off. The tribes pick up all that, you know. And the way the policy is right now in Grays Harbor, it does not allow a viable commercial fishery for us. It does not. And the numbers and everything we've seen due to weather conditions and the whole works, the fish were biased by the time we ever got to fish. That's the bottom line. We got the very tail end of the run. So I think, and I actually believe the department and representatives of the department are obligated to create fisheries for the commercial side of this, too. If you've got any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Bob. Joel.
Thank the commission and the director and the staff for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Joe Durham. I'm from Aberdeen. I was a past advisor for the Grays Harbor, but no longer am, and I am now free to speak as I feel to speak. And what I'm giving you today are my views and my opinions. Larry Carpenter, Ron Warren just said that there's several of us that have been fighting this. I've been in this battle since 1993. I've represented Trout Unlimited, many, many other organizations through the years on the Wyandotte mitigation. That's what I want to talk to you about. 400,000 fish going into the SATSEP using Wyandotte mitigation is a direct violation of the agreement signed between Tacoma Public Utilities, City of Aberdeen, Corps of Engineers, FERC, and Department of Fish and Wildlife. If you want to do 400,000 coho on the SATSEP, find the money within the Department of Fish and Wildlife to do it. You cut that many, more than that many, back in, I think it was around 2009, 2010, due to what was said to be lack of funds. Since then, we've seen our license increase, we've seen costs go up, we've seen our fishing opportunities go down, the commercial fishermen are paying for it, the recreational fishermen are paying for it, all user groups are paying for it, but your problem with your fish returning is not due to what's happening inside the waters of Grays Harbor. It's happening in the ocean. The ocean draggers, a commercial entity, takes roughly 40% of the Chinook slated to come back to the waters of Grays Harbor at Washington Coast. Purse seiners are no better. They are not allowed to keep the bycatch of any salmon, neither one of those fisheries. When they bring them in, they're crushed, they're dead, they're thrown overboard. The Wyandotte mitigation, Ron says 100,000 unmarked, but, coated wire tag will be released into the Wyandotte. The Wyandotte is probably the largest sustaining river in the Grays Harbor system producing coho. You take Wyandotte out of the system, Grays Harbor will not meet the escapement goals for the Grays Harbor system. That's bottom line. If you want to put fish into that river, stop putting above the lake. Stop putting above the spillway. Take what you need and put them back into the river to spawn naturally. There are about 6, maybe 7 streams that flow into the Wyandotte that have the capability of producing salmon of any species. The others are too small and blockages thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars have been spent on the Wyandotte, Grisdale Road, in those areas, removing culverts and barriers. So you're $400,000 into the Satsit, and I'm telling anybody that sticks up for it, is wrong. You are in violation of what the agreement agrees to. And I've sent Larry Carpenter, your director, your commission president, many, 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 many things on it. And I hope to share it with the rest of your commissioners. I don't know that he did or not. But I'm tired of fighting the battle. You don't see, you two guys you don't see here, that's Dave and Bill. Bill brings a can and kicks it. And Dave is tired of it. And he says he's done with it. One other thing. And this will take me about 15 seconds. Department of Fish and Wildlife is in violation of the Southern Resident Killer Whale Program plan. There's funding. They're raising 300,000 coho on the Satsit, which is not listed on the rivers at all for southern whale recovery. And you're violating that fund, as far as I understand it. Thank you for your time. Any questions, I'll answer them.
No questions. Thank you, Joe. Daryl?
Thank you, commissioners, for allowing me to speak. My name is Daryl Johnson. I am a charter boat owner and operator out of Westport, also a river guide on the Grays Harbor rivers and the coastal streams. I'm here speaking on behalf of myself and the 30-plus members of the Grays Harbor Guide Association. The guide industry brings 25,000-plus people to the Grays Harbor County every year. These are men and women who all come to fish. They buy fishing licenses. They stay in our hotels. They buy gas. They buy food. And they come here to enjoy what Grays Harbor has to offer. These same sportsmen and women are seeing the effects of the last paper fish. We believe that through an analysis of the department's methodology of forecasting run sizes needs to be done to see where adjustments need to be made. There also needs to be steps taken to establish an avian predator control program. Too many of our state's produced fish, unfortunately, are sustaining unreasonable high predation while doing little to support sustainable and meaningful fisheries. We know there isn't one easy fix. The sport anglers, tribal anglers, the ecosystems are all going to suffer when there's no fish left. The department will still have funding if there's no fish to figure out what happened to them and to manage if there's 100 or 100,000. We believe it's the duty of the department to provide Washington State license holders meaningful and sustainable fisheries. Thank you.
Daryl?
Yes.
Good comment. You spoke from the heart.
Yeah.
You got any suggestions?
Come to some of our guide meetings and we'll gladly have a great discussion.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, we can't take questions from the audience. Well, let us know when they are and where they are.
We send emails out, so
look forward to
we'll
it.
Make sure we tag everybody.
Thanks for coming.